Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. We used to be better at this. Manton Reese, I have been, busy working on my house still, stuff like that. Although I've discovered this this fascinating concept called outsourcing,
right,
where apparently you can pay people who are better at Home Depot than you to do things in your house. Did you know about this? This is something, I guess, it's fairly new, this idea, but I'm going to try it out a little bit, see how it works for me.
That's good. Yeah, it's hard sometimes to delegate. I have a really hard time with coding to like let someone else just hand this off, let someone else do it.
Yeah.
Except for very specific areas like icon design or whatnot. I think houses are the same way. I'd like to do a lot myself, but there are specific areas that I am happy to outsource, like
yes,
plumbing and yeah, weird electrical work. And, you know, I guess there's a longer list. I could probably keep going, but,
you know, I got to the point where I was like, oh yeah, this is like going to be something that like we have to look at for the rest of the time we live in this house. And maybe I better like get somebody who's good at putting a wall up.
Right. Yeah. That way you have to live with stuff that when we got our houses, like 38 years old or something, which is not that old, but it's old enough that there's all sorts of weird problems.
Uh-huh.
We kind of took the approach of, and it took us a while to get this approach, but the approach of like, if we have to fix something, let's do it right this time. So that, because, yeah, you know, people, other people before us maybe did some quick patch jobs on something and it's not ideal, and
yeah,
you've got to fix it, do it right. And I don't know, can the same thing be said to software? I don't know. You got to fix a bug, don't do a quick hack, do it right so you don't have to worry about it later.
Oh, absolutely. There are arguments in favor of both solutions, but yeah. You know, I've been enjoying the last few days getting a chance to dig back into some coding stuff. And you know me, Manton, because I am a big like fan of all new things. I've mostly been focusing on Swift because it's the best, and you'd be a fool not to be embracing Swift right now. So of course,
live in the future, Daniel.
Yeah, that's right. So of course, I've been continuing to adapt my one class of my one app from Objective-C to Swift, and it's been more enjoyable. It, you know, in the intervening releases since I last really sort of seriously played with Swift, things are quote unquote just working more than I, you know, part of the problem with Swift for me was trying to do all this stuff and it doesn't work. Okay. Is it not working because I don't know how to use this language, or because Xcode is broken, or because Swift, the language, is broken, or because Swift, the language, is designed, you know, broken by design. And I can tell that the language is maturing quickly because more and more I'm just not running into head scratchers. There are still some, but, and I'm not pushing the envelope really. I think the way I'm pushing the envelope is that the way I'm getting my experience with it is to, try to convert an Objective-C. I'm actually trying to convert my application delegate of all things, which is kind of an interesting test because it has to interface with a bunch of different Cocoa stuff, you know, depending on how complicated your app is. But
yeah,
it's not just like, can I convert a view to Swift?
And the app delegate tends often, for better or worse, to get bigger than it should be. You know, it's like,
yes,
kind of a dumping ground for a bunch of junk.
And right.
So that actually is fairly ambitious thing to, unless yours is very small and clean, it's an ambitious thing to.
Well, it is the app delegate for an app that I have not released yet, which is a smaller, it's a less ambitious app than, say, Mars Edit. But,
okay,
you know, it still does some fun stuff. It registers for notifications, you know, so I had to figure out little things like, you know, just how to handle that. There's one little nuanced thing here I got to figure out because it's one of these code smells. I have a notification for key window, right? When the key window changes in my app. And I have a comment in here that says, while a document window is becoming key, the document controller may not completely have everything wired up in a reliable way. So wait until the next iteration of the run loop. And so that it has one of these skanky self-perform selector rebuild format menu after delay zero. And it's one of these things where, you know, it's the sin of Objective C runtime where you say, I don't really know how to solve this, so but I just know that everything's going to be fine if I wait until this iteration of the run loop is over. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, self-perform selector business is just something you can't do in Swift because, you know, they don't support any kind of dynamic dispatch, and they probably never will, right?
Until today. So the I guess it's the fifth developer release. They dropped this. That seems like every release they're changing the language quite a bit, more than I would have expected, even though they warned everyone.
Yeah.
But they've actually made a lot of changes, and so brand new dynamic keyword today coming out. Not today, sometime this week.
It was just a few weeks ago, Manton, I think maybe the week or two after WWDC, and we were saying, as we were, I thought, very graciously analyzing the rift between Swift and Objective-C development styles, we were observing that there's this whole kind of programming that you can't do with Swift, which is, you know, to say, figure out where this actually, which method actually handles this, what implementation of the method actually handles this at runtime. And it's like we're the only ones complaining, Manton. And then they were like, they must have heard our podcast and they were like, well, we should definitely fix that because core intuition is mad. But obviously what actually happened probably was that a bunch of really smart people inside and outside of Apple were like, you know, Swift is great, but operating in an Objective-C runtime world, it really needs to be able to like cooperate with this style of programming. And that's what it looks like they did. It's like what we sort of dreamed. When we said that, Manton, I was thinking, yeah, this would be nice, but come on, this is Swift. This isn't going to happen.
Right.
I'm a little bit flabbergasted.
I'm a little surprised too, but I guess it's great. I mean, they are listening and it's still, I don't feel like it was, you know, I mean, it was a big change in some ways, but it's not the default. So they can still have this kind of strongly opinionated default language, but they have ways to hook in and make it more flexible or adapt into kind of how the traditional Objective-C crowd likes things to work.
Yep.
But so, yeah, I mean, the Swift is such an odd language. I mean, it is, I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily, but it is strongly opinionated, but it has a lot in it. And it's not, even the language itself, they're adding, you know, new syntax and features. And I hopefully, and I don't think this will happen, but hopefully, as happy as I am that they have adapted in this particular case with dynamic, I don't want them to make concessions for every little request necessarily, because there still is a value in that 1.0 language being fairly minimal to an extent.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of new stuff. I mean, you should definitely, every developer, even if you haven't messed with Swift, should read the Xcode release notes and kind of just keep an eye on what's going on. I'm not jumping in actually as much as you are. I have an app that I'm working on that will ship after Yosemite ships, and I'm using Xcode 6, and I made a new file in the app that's in Swift, and I thought, you know, if there's this new feature I want to add, I'll add it in Swift. And so I have this class file, and I've got all the bridging, and everything seems to work correctly. But then I was like, yeah, now what? I mean, then I went back and wrote stuff in Objective-C, just because there's that initial hurdle of being productive in Swift that I'm still not past.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can tell how much of a noob I am when one of the things I had to change or I had to implement in Swift was simply setting the key equivalent modifier mask on a menu item. Mm-hmm. This is where you say like set key equivalent modifier mask to NS command key mask. And then you use the or bitwise operator for NS control key mask, say. And I spent probably 20 minutes trying to figure out how to do this in Swift.
Right.
Because you have to say, here's how you do it in Swift. Maybe this isn't the I think this is how you do this. This is a little fiddly, okay? I think this is how you have to do it in Swift. You have to say, first of all, to get each mask, you have to say NS event modifier flags dot command key mask. And that is actually an object that's some kind of like low level Swift option set, something or other. And then, so that has a method on it called toRaw, which creates, I think, an unsigned integer. And then to turn that into an integer, which can be ored, I think. I don't know. So then you use you can't just cast that to an int. You have to make an int with that as the initializer parameter. And then you can OR that with another one that's been created in exactly the same way.
I haven't seen this code, but I can imagine it that it's longer and, as you said, more fiddly than the C version, which is another thing. I mean, a lot of people said Swift is concise and it's beautiful. And I find that a lot of what I've written so far is a little messier than it would be in Objective-C. And maybe that's just because we're this rough, stage of the frameworks aren't really totally Swiftified yet. But some of it is just, I don't know, new syntax and just getting used to things. I find it funny a little bit that people used to complain about Objective-C. The first complaint, no matter what, everybody that learns Objective-C, the first complaint is the brackets, square brackets. Like, oh, why? This doesn't make any sense. This is not like any other language. It's terrible. And so they're like, we listen to you, no brackets anymore. But instead, we hear you like punctuation. So here's an exclamation mark. Here's a double right. question mark. Here's, and it's kind of like the, it's kind of like that classic, grep joke. It's like, I want to use a regular expression and now you have two problems kind of thing. It's right. kind of that same, like, here's a bunch of extra punctuation for you.
Yeah. I mean, it goes both ways. You can't, this is the truth about languages in general, not just programming languages, right? Like, with, for instance, English gets beat up because we have all of this extreme lack of rules, right? Like almost like we draw from so many different languages in the world that there's a lot of lack of consistency in English. But then what I hear from other people, from many people who have learned English as a second language, coming from languages that maybe are more ordered and structured, they're just like, what's great about English is that if there's like a feeling or a mood or a situation, there's probably like a really concise word for it in English that just like nails it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like some languages are like the vase for putting flowers in is like a word. I don't know. I'm losing my train of thought here, but like there's something about the pragmatism of English that's like, oh yeah. Well, if we don't have the word for it, we'll just make up something new. right. And we do that all the time. English sort of like encourages it by its lack of strict rules, I think. And
mm-hmm. yeah,
all that just to say that there's going to be something good to say about any language. There's good things to say about English, and then there's so many bad things to say about English. Like it's absurd, right? There's no way to predict by the way something is spelled how you pronounce it. Like there's no way to predict with certainty.
Yeah.
And that must be so frustrating to people,
Right. Yeah. And so I might sound like I'm bashing the language again. I'm not. There's so many things about Swift I like. And when so I see some new code that really takes advantage of the language, that is kind of a beautiful thing. For example, a lot of our listeners have probably used AF networking. It's hugely popular for doing networking stuff on iOS and Mac. The sort of next generation version of that, it's called Alamo Fire. It's been just brand new. It's kind of inspired by, but it's brand new framework just written for Swift. And that is a great case, I think, of where the code is more concise and readable, and it uses closures really well. And that stuff is nice to see. But it's kind of, it's almost like it sits by itself. It's like this brand new thing. And it, for those of us that have an existing app that are just kind of trucking along, trying to figure out how we can use Swift, it doesn't feel quite as clean sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and what's impressive about Alamo Fire, among other things, is that it was authored by the very person who made AF networking,
mm-hmm.
right? So Matt Thompson just saw this, I guess, as an opportunity to eat his own framework for lunch. I mean, he's got to be doing this in a sense because he thinks, I mean, he said some stuff on the blog post about it. I remember that it was like, you can still use AF networking. It's fine, but obviously he thought this is like exciting. I mean, he obviously yeah. had a lot of experience in this realm of networking code. So yeah, it's very cool.
So do you think Apple will adopt the same approach of instead of, again, Swift defying existing frameworks, come out with reimagined versions of some of our most loved frameworks that are they're very different, because that's kind of what he's done here, for better or worse, is it's brand new. I mean, it kind of shares some goals and similarities with AF Networking, but it's, I assume, completely brand new rewrite and simplified in some ways. Doesn't necessarily try to do everything.
I don't know what the world we live in today has, for example, all of Apple's frameworks. The documentation for them now shows how you can interact with the API via Swift and how you can interact with it via Objective-C. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, a luxury of Swift being able to essentially interface with most Objective-C, classes. But is the opposite isn't as true, right? I mean, off the top of my head, I'm not thinking it through, but I'm imagining that, can this Alamo Fire framework be called from Objective-C easily? And I don't know. I haven't looked at it yet, but I have to imagine it's designed with all of these idiomatic peculiarities of Swift in mind, so that what happens the first time Apple comes up with an API or a whole new framework, as you suggest, that just can't be called from Objective-C?
Right. That's a great question. And we hinted this a little bit in previous episodes about, as soon as Apple does something like that, you're long past the writing being on the wall. You really need to jump on the boat with the new stuff. But that's a great question, because in my little example Swift file that I have in a real Mac app with one Swift file and a whole mountain of Objective-C, one of my tests was calling that Swift class from Objective-C, and that stuff works, but my case is so simple. I mean, I don't know if something like Alamo Fire, if everything fits well, and you could actually do that. I'm not really sure.
Right. For example, maybe the closest comparison we have is blocks, right? And mm-hmm. there are methods in Apple frameworks that you can't effectively link to and use the API from a version of Objective-C that predates blocks. And, mm-hmm. There's no this is how you do it if you're using Objective-C 2, and this is how you do it if you're using 1. There's just no, for some of this stuff, there's just no option. They say you got to use blocks if you want to use this. Mm-hmm. So we might start to see some stuff like that. And I guess it'll just come down to, hopefully, for the sake of, people who either need to or want to use Objective-C, that hopefully there will be, hopefully the APIs that come out that do tread in that direction, I don't know, will be offering something that is sort of unique interest to Swift developers. I don't know. We're going to see how this plays out.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It might be something like, I remember when Arc first came on the scene, and I was I didn't really get it at first. I was like, yeah, I know how to retain and release my stuff, and not that big of a deal. Now I love it. I mean, I love using Arc. I could go back if I have to, and sometimes I do have to work on older projects, but I love the new stuff. But remember, there was that period where a lot of people jumped on Arc immediately, and then you had open source projects that were Arc only. And then, of course, someone would say, well, I'm not Arc yet, or I want to, I don't know, there'd be something, and I want to do a,
they'd be like, what about me? Yeah, don't leave me behind, right?
Exactly. And even though Xcode does a great job of mixing and matching Arc and non, you still would have people say, I don't know, here's a pull request to make this work better with the old stuff. And the answer, I think, a lot of times was, well, we don't care about the old stuff. And I could see that happening with Swift, too. Some developers that are totally jumping onto Swift, they're just not going to care that much about compatibility with anybody else.
Yeah, well, Manton, let's not get too deep into Swift, but I will say one more thing, at least I want to say, is there was some pretty interesting news from a blog. I guess it's a guy named Jesse Squires. Did you see this?
I don't think I did.
It's called Apples to Apples Part 2, and he's been examining the performance of Swift in contrast to Objective-C. And the long and short of it is, basically, as of this latest release, the developer preview 5, according to this guy's tests, Swift has become, hands down, for his tests, which include things like a lot of sorting algorithms, he says Swift has become, hands down, dramatically faster than Objective-C. And so it's sort of, you know, people have been saying since Swift was announced, oh, this is good. Oh, you're giving up all this dynamic stuff is good. Letting the compiler make assumptions that it can count on at compile time will lead to all these great performance gains. And we're, you know, us crotchety old guys are like, no, but I want my dynamic dispatch. And, I think this is a great example of how maybe we're going to get both. Maybe we're going to have, you know, like you said, the default opinionated nature of Swift can be that it wants to know everything at compile time, and the payoff for being able to allow that may be this great performance improvements. And then when you need to do something that meshes with the old dynamic nature of Objective-C, you just do so explicitly and with the knowledge that you're going to be giving up the ability to have this kind of like super duper optimization. Mm-hmm. But we'll link to it in the show notes. It's jessesquires.com. I'll give the full link. And you can see for yourself if you agree that this bodes well for the future of Swift and performance of software written with it.
That's cool. Maybe Apple knows what they're doing after all.
Whoa, wouldn't that
that's
be
a
funny?
Good sign.
All right, folks, we're very happy to have back as sponsors of the show this week our friends from Smile, who would like us to talk about PDF Pen for iPad this week. Of course, you know what PDF Pen is. We've talked about it on the Mac. We've talked about it on the iPad before. But just to remind you, it's a great app for the iPad that lets you edit PDFs anywhere you are. And this is something we haven't talked about before. It also supports a bunch of popular Bluetooth styluses. So you can draw directly with these styluses with great precision right on your PDFs using the Jot Touch Pogo Connect. Is it Jaja or Haha? J-A-J-A. You'll have to let me know, Manton. You're the expert on that stuff. And also, this is new in 1.8, Wacom or Wacom. This is a pronunciation test here. Wacom Bluetooth styluses as well. And you can use PDF Pen to sign contracts, fix typos, correct a price list, or fill out a form while you're on the go. You can take PDF documents with you, add notes, highlighting, and other markup anywhere you are during your downtime. Also has these great features that let you sync your PDFs with PDF Pen for OS X using iCloud or Dropbox. And you can grab and save PDFs to Dropbox, Evernote, Google Drive, Box, and Transporter. It's just like this super hub for your PDFs for organizing them, you know, moving them around and marking them up. You can learn more about PDF Pen for iPad at smilesoftware.com/coreint. Thanks again to Smile for sponsoring the show this week with PDF Pen for iPad.
Yeah, this is great to see. I didn't even realize the stylus support. I do have a bunch of these styluses, actually. I've got three here. I've got the Jot Touch. I've got the Wacom. I can never remember how to pronounce it. I pronounce it differently each time.
I always said it Wacom.
Wacom.
That was my one. And then everyone was always like Wacom.
There's at least three different ways. Yeah, I can never remember. I always get it wrong. But I have I have that. I've got the Jot Touch. I've got another one. And so I was sitting here playing with PDF Pen. In the past, like you said, it's got a whole bunch of support for different services, for opening from Dropbox and other stuff and saving it out, which is great. I've used it for the classic case of opening a PDF document, scribbling on it, changing a couple things, and saving it out again, signing something, sending it. But the scribbling with a stylus is really neat too, because you can also just create a blank PDF in the app. You just say new PDF document, you know, I want it to be blank or grid paper or whatever, and then you can draw on it or whatnot. And they've got real nice, you know, it smooths the lines for you from the stylus. You can move things around and resize the pen strokes, like kind of like objects. So I assume it's vector, but I'm not sure. It's a really handy feature, and I didn't even realize it was there. So cool to see them supporting not just so many services and so many features in PDF, but also support for all these new styluses. So that's really cool. Thanks again for sponsoring the show, Smile. You can learn more at smilesoftware.com/coreint.
And folks, just to remind you, Smile has been great supporting the show all this year. They've been supporting the show once a month all this year. What a great support they've been giving us. You can let them know how much you appreciate them supporting the show by letting them know when you buy one of their apps that you heard about it from Core Intuition. Thanks again, Smile, for your ongoing support.
All right, Daniel, we got some great feedback on last week's show talking about the App Store, sustainable software, how do you make a living with this? It's so difficult. And one thing I kind of heard, I was linking to Overcast, Marco's new release, which is great. And, you know, every once in a while you hear this kind of hint of, well, yeah, Marco can do that. It's fine for him because he's got popular blog and the podcast and, you know, whatever. But that doesn't work for anybody else. And I heard a couple replies kind of along those lines when I was talking about how great I thought Overcast was. And Marco, since we recorded, I think his post went up the same day we recorded or pushed our podcast live last week. He has a long post about some more of this App Store stuff, just like kind of assessing what the App Store is like right now, what you kind of want to do, what you don't want to do, just kind of reacting to this conversation. I thought that was really good. And we hadn't read that when we talked about it last week.
Right. Yeah. Well, Marco hits on a lot of that whole "that's fine for Marco" thing is a real, it really bugs me too, because
yes,
here's what it is. I've been getting this kind of crap for years, because as soon as you reach any level of success, as modest as it may be, you gotta look at it this way, Manton. Like, there are so many people out there who are either not trying at all to succeed or are trying, you know, kind of half-heartedly, or for whatever reason, they just haven't succeeded, right? And if you achieve a modest amount of success, you are immediately vastly outnumbered by people who haven't reached that success.
Right.
This sounds like so douchey, but but just to hear, I'm sort of thinking this out loud as I go. But there's sort of that's just to say. You don't have to succeed that much in order to gain a significant group of people who would judge you as being disconnected from the struggle of trying to succeed, right? It's like, well, that, in other words, like, as soon as I had like a blog, right? As soon as I had Red Sweater Blog, and I was like, oh man, it's really hard to, you know, find an audience, and, you know, and people would be like, well, no, it's not hard for you. You have a huge blog readership, which meant like, I had 1,000 readers or something, you know, and I was very grateful for that. Don't get me wrong. But point being, like, there's always somebody who's going to say, well, that must be easy for you because you have this like great advantage. And it often dismisses the fact that that advantage was earned, you know?
Right. People want to skip ahead, and they forget the years it took to build up the audience. And to, I mean, when I met Marco first, Instapaper was a little app side project that had just shipped. You know, we were talking about Tumblr and other stuff he was working on. I mean, it's taken a long time to build up these successes one after the other. And people want the shortcut, right? They want to say, I just want to jump straight to millions of followers on Twitter. And
right,
that very rarely happens. Sometimes it'll happen in the App Store and some crazy fluke, your app will hit. But most of the time, no, it takes a long time.
Yeah. And it takes, I mean, it's infuriating to those of us who have been lucky/talented at achieving some level of success. It's infuriating to us when people try to essentially diminish that hard work by saying, They present it as if we were just like, we're so lucky that we were just born into this position. You know, it reminds me of the like laughable old landed gentry stuff. Remember that? People were criticizing some of us as like being disconnected because we were like all the big hoity-toity like Mac developers who are already successful. And it's like, you know what? We've been there. We've been at zero sales. We started at zero sales. We started at zero readers. We started at zero podcasts, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it takes a while sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of, certainly one of the themes we hit on last week was when, I mean, Jared's post, which is even more widely linked now, and I really think it was a really good post about just showing the sales of his app unread. But there's so many different ways you can read that. The first way you can read it and the tone of it is this sort of, you know, I'm not rich yet. What happened? But the other way is, wow, what a huge success in such a short amount of time. And also, I kept thinking about this app a little bit more. And first of all, let me preface what I'm about to say by saying I love Unread. It is on my home screen. I use it all the time. Great app. But think about this app. It has fewer features then a huge, all the competition that's out there, right? It's a brand, it's a newcomer in the market. It doesn't have any one or two like huge things that it can do that every other RSS reader can't do. Yet because of the design and it was so well crafted, he was able to really come into the market and make something, you know, successful. I would call it successful, right? I mean, he was able to capture a lot of mindshare, a lot of great reviews. And I mean, so I don't know, you think about it that way, I don't know, pretty great.
Yeah.
Because he was up against like a lot. And to come in with something that was only focused on design and not one-upping, you know, like major features of any other app, that's difficult. This is a real challenge. Like with Marco Overcast, he came into the market, similar, very crowded market, a lot of established players, but he came with some killer features that no one else had, right? He came up with some cool, crazy, you know, the smart speed, the sound boost stuff. I mean, he came on with some stuff that really no one else had, in addition to everything else in terms of, you know, thoughtful design, syncing that worked, all that kind of stuff. So you can't, it's difficult to expect an app coming into a market like that to be successful unless it's got something really special. And I think Unread did, but it was in the design side, which is difficult to sell sometimes.
Well, and it just takes time for everybody to learn, even if your app is great. It takes time for people to learn that. To learn that it exists, B, to hear that maybe it has some advantages, and then C, to actually break that inertia to download it and try it and you know, be a part of the public that actually evaluates it. You know, on the same line of thinking, Marco had a great sort of, it was almost like the after show of his appearance on the Debug podcast with Rene Ritchie and Guy English. And he vented a little bit about this, which was good. It was fun for me to hear because it was, his thinking is along the same lines as mine. And, you know, probably since hearing his appearance on that show, my thinking has maybe even solidified about this subject. But I thought a great point he made was the so-called advantage, like the that's fine for bias, really dramatically only applies to the hype that surrounds your launch, right? And like, I can totally agree with that. Like, I love this advantage that I now have, that when I come up with something new and I share it with the world, that I have this launch day advantage, right? That everybody who's coming out of nowhere, who's never had a blog or a podcast or a successful app before, they have to start from scratch to find their audience. And it's a really great advantage to be able to say, okay, if I make a new app, I've got my Swift application delegate in, and I finish this up and ship it and tell people on Twitter about it and ask friends in the press to review it, there's going to be, by my standards at least, a ton of people looking at it within a day or two. And that's really exciting and really scary. But if it sucks, it sucks, Manton. You know, like if it's not good enough to earn the long-term commitment of those people who see it on day one and day two, then I'm in no different of a boat than the person who's making their first 1.0 who has no built-in, you know, marketing advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, I can come out with my app and say, haha, I have, you know, X thousands of people are going to see it on day one. And then somebody else can come along out of nowhere and say, well, that's all well and good, but your app sucks and mine is good. And and that's going to gain them attention that I don't get. That's fine for people who make great stuff. But
right. But for the rest of us who make apps that are no good and buggy and crash. Yeah, no, that's totally true. And it gets back to like, what's more important, like having that initial launch that's successful or the word of mouth and spreading of the app in the weeks that follow? And I don't know, sometimes it's maybe a toss up because that launch is important, especially in the iOS App Store. That was one of Jared's points, is that the app launch does need to be a little bit blockbuster these days.
I don't know that I agree with that. Even on iOS, I don't know if I agree with that because it's...
Let me put it there. Maybe I'll say for the $2.99, like the $3, the $4 mm-hmm. app, I think that may be true. Like you may need to break into the mainstream a little bit for a couple days to be able to make it work. Because it's just so difficult to sustain high sales, revenue with such a small price tab. Like, your word of mouth is only going to get you so far when your app's at 99 cents. But I don't know. I don't know if I totally agree on one side or the other. But the point is that word of mouth and spreading of the app, that's what, that launch day is just one day. Maybe it's a week. Maybe you get featured. Maybe you can drag it on for a couple weeks of good press. But it's the rest of the 50 weeks out of the year that doesn't help you. It's the word of mouth. It's people saying, oh, this app's pretty good, and sharing it.
Yeah, well, I think that this is a fundamental problem people have if they focus so much on launch day and they don't anticipate or think about ways to have, like, we touched on this last week, like, you have to find ways to make other days big. After last week's show, we actually got a pretty good note from one of our listeners, friend of the show, John Voorhees, who noted that this exact kind of thing. And I said last week, like, once you make an app, you have this value that could be extracted from it ongoing over time, and you don't know when that value is going to come. He has a great example. His son is, I guess he made an app when he was 11 years old called Math Time. We'll link to it, help give him another spike. But apparently his son's app was in the store, I guess probably not doing great, I would have to imagine. It probably wasn't doing great if this was such a big deal. But his app ended up by fluke chance being mentioned by Rush Limbaugh.
That's great.
And he says, in the few days after Owen's app was mentioned, sales of the app increased around 75x. Nice. Say 75 times the normal sales. This wasn't launch day, Manton.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Flappy Bird? Flappy Bird had been out in the store
for months,
right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden something happened and everyone's like, whoa, got to get Flappy Bird.
Right.
And sometimes that's a fluke. Sometimes that's because Rush Limbaugh talks about your app. Sometimes maybe it's because, we touched on this last week too, but like, sometimes maybe it's because you are on the ball and you say, like, and you notice that the world is in a position where suddenly your app can be framed as a perfect solution to a problem that the world is only now realizing it has. So maybe, maybe you make WeTransfer and it's your most successful launch ever, and you nonetheless decide to not develop it anymore.
Rub it in.
But let's say you make WeTransfer, and then one day, because, like, one of the key features of WeTransfer is being able to, like, manage your little avatar, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so one day, Nintendo says, "Hey, we're doing this cool new promotion. Whoever has the coolest avatar, wins. Gets to be in the next Nintendo game,
right?
And then you can sit back and say, well, that's interesting. Or you can say on your blog or whatever, we're doing a promotion too in conjunction with Nintendo.
Yeah.
And if you use WeTransfer and you win this Nintendo contest, then we are going to, donate $1,000 to charity or something.
Yep.
Right.
And a couple of people will pick that up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when people are Googling, how in the world do I get my avatar image, my app will come up.
Yep.
And it's funny you mentioned that, like, a contest, because I actually did a couple things with WeTransfer like that. I gave away a Wii once.
I remember this. Yeah.
Did a little press release and I gave away a Wii. I can't even remember how you entered. Oh, so I own the @Wii account on Twitter still for some reason.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so you just had to @Wii reply anything, and I randomly selected somebody to win a Wii. I'll never forget this. I went to the post office. I mailed this Wii out to this person. He was super happy. And I did that. And when the iPhone 3GS came out, it was the first iPhone that filmed video. And this is not WeTransfer, this is my other app, Clipstart. But I gave away an iPhone to like promote this feature. And I gave someone basically an iTunes or Apple Store gift card, And so I've done a couple of those little contests. And I forgot about that because it's been a few years.
Yeah.
But that's a great example of taking something that people are kind of excited about and figuring out how you can work that to your advantage. And it's also kind of fun. Yeah. I had fun giving that stuff away.
And by no means is it like trivial to learn how to do this and to succeed. But the point is that you don't just get a chance to make it big on launch day. And we stressed last week, or I stressed it was one of my rants, but I was talking about how, 1.0 is just the beginning. You want to go 2.0, 3.0, et cetera. That's one of the ways that you can build up additional hype as the years go on, is to release like a 2.0 and other releases. But yeah, you got to kind of always just like be tuned in to, and I'm not great at it either. But it doesn't even necessarily have to be, like a big deal. It can just be some like solution that you've even known about for a long time is possible with your app, but you've neglected to ever make a big deal out of it. There were times like when I got a pretty good boost out of saying, oh, by the way, this is how you can use this feature in Mars Edit to, I posted about, you can use multi markdown in mm-hmm. Mars Edit. You just have to like put a custom script in. And this mm-hmm. is something I've told people, individuals, via support responses. But you turn something like that into a blog post, and suddenly it's linkable and something that people might want to share. Yeah. So you say with Tweet Library, it was like great for you to be able to say, hey, this is how you can take the new, at the time, Twitter tweets archive and import it into Tweet Library. That becomes newsworthy. And it's mm-hmm. it's like something that happened outside of your control in the world made your app into a new version of itself,
Yeah. Well, it makes your app more useful. I think that's the goal. It's like finding ways to make your app more useful for your customers. And this is something I think I actually used to be better at this than I am now. Yeah. I mean, as I'm listing these examples and you are, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not doing these things anymore much. And maybe it's because I'm just scattered and I have a lot of different apps. I'm not focused, but I think I used to be better at recognizing these things. And recognizing it too, I think in a sincere way, not because there's so much talk sometimes of, SEO and how can you game different systems and make people search for the right keywords. And like there's ways to overthink all this. And then there's sort of just a sincere, I'm just going to tell you how you can do a cool thing. And guess what? You'll get more hits to your blog just as a natural consequence of that.
Yep. Yeah, I used to be way better at it too. I'm not listening to my own advice. And you're right. There's something about like being overwhelmed with, all the work and other things in life and buying a house and going to Home Depot, all this stuff. But yeah, every once in a while I take a step back and say, I should be, blogging about this. So here's one example, Manton, where I could really be capitalizing on knowledge that I have amassed over the years. Okay, Mars Edit, as you know, works with a ton of different systems. People are always asking me, does it work with XYZ system? And then I have to say, yes, it works with, for example, yes, it works with Tumblr. No, you cannot insert a photo into an arbitrary post on Tumblr because of a shortcoming in Tumblr's API. Right. And so I have like this in my mind and in my notes, I have this expansive database of all of the different features of all the different blogging systems and how they work with an app like Mars Edit. So here's an example of something where for a long time I've been thinking like I should put up like the world standard database spreadsheet comparison of different mm-hmm. blogging systems and what their API capabilities are. Right. Has a couple of advantages for me. It's a subtle way of shaming people, sites that don't support APIs as well as they should. For instance, like Squarespace, there would be this big line with X's through it. The show is not sponsored by Squarespace. But also it would be this magnet on the internet for people who, for whatever reason, want to know this information. And at the top mm-hmm. of the page would be like, this page is brought to you by Mars Edit. Right?
Right. And it works to your advantage, that you support all these systems, where most apps in the App Store and iOS especially, it's like, we work with WordPress.
Right.
Or something. So it really plays up your strength.
Yeah, then I just have to hope WordPress doesn't put together a spreadsheet of apps that support advanced API features of WordPress. Then I go...
Works both ways.
Whistling down the path, yeah. But, that's just one example. It's like, if you're in this business, there's a few things you do as an app maker. You write software, you handle customer support, you handle marketing, you have to get the word out, you have to be on Twitter, you have to let people know about your app.
Wait. You have to be on Twitter? What?
Oh, sorry, Manson. You know,
I like how you snuck that
in. There's plenty of opportunities to succeed in life without being on Twitter, I'm sure. But, you know, you have to let everybody on app.net know about your app. But, you know, you got to get out there. You got to get, you know, you can choose Facebook. You can do your promotion on Facebook, but you got to be out there.
Yes.
And this is just one more of those dang things you got to do. You have to find creative ways to get people talking about your software. And one of those ways is to, that's fine for Marco, have your own podcast and talk about your software. One of those ways is that's fine for Daniel and Manton, have your podcast and talk about your software. One of those ways is that's fine for John Gruber, have a big blog that you can just announce your own software releases on, right? But everybody has to find their own ways of getting the word out. And the point is, even that is not sufficient if your app is not very good. Right?
And
I count myself in this. You know, Black Ink, for example, a lot of people heard about it, Manton. I'm not getting rich off of Black Ink. It is a pretty great app for solving crosswords, but it doesn't fill a need that enough people are desperate enough to send money to me for. If I were in a less privileged position, I might say, well, that's fine for people like Manton Reese who have an audience. And if only I had an audience, then I'm sure I would be a big success with Black Ink. But the fact is, I've had my audience. I've made some money off of it, but it's not a big hit. Who do I blame about that? Where do I get in line to blame somebody about that?
Well, yeah, and I think I'm a good example for that too, because I'm not as successful as you are, and as Marco is, and you know why? Well, maybe my apps aren't good enough, but there's a whole bunch of other things that I'm not doing also. And I mean, you went through a whole list of things, and you can't just pick one or two of these. You kind of have to do all of them because you don't know which is the one that's going to be the most important.
Yep.
You kind of have to do everything. You have to talk to the press. You have to blog. You have to have some kind of voice or build up some kind of audience. I don't know. You got to do everything.
Yep. You have to have an attitude that's like determined to cultivate over weeks, months, and years a higher and higher number of people out there in the world who, when given the opportunity to evaluate your software, will feel more inclined to do so than not, right? And that's like what we're all trying to build up is just, you know, I got hundreds of acquaintances and friends probably who respect me and like the work I do in general and yet have never even bothered to download and try Mars Edit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the fact of life is there's inertia here, right? Some people don't think they need it. Some people don't know that they do need it. Some people don't need it. Bottom line. But all you can do, I think, is try to build up a greater and greater awareness of your stuff so that whatever percentage of people finally do get around to looking at your stuff, that it's, you know, that it's a percentage of a higher and higher number, you know? That's what I'm going to try to do anyway, Manton. I'm going to try to get more and more people out there to be on the verge of downloading something from my site.
Right. Yeah, sometimes it takes... I mean, that's the whole thing with advertising too. It's like sometimes it takes someone noticing it a couple times or hearing about it a couple times or more, dozens of times. And, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who have heard of a few of my products but haven't tried them. But maybe one day they'll see a write-up on, you know, some blog or some press article or something about one of my apps. And then they'll say, oh yeah, I kind of remember hearing about that. And maybe in the back of their head, they had a good feeling about hearing about it. Like it sounded like something good. And there was at least a little bit of a personal connection with there. And that maybe will be enough to tip the balance and they'll download it and they'll try it and they'll buy it. So that's a perfect example of where it takes time.
Yep.
You know, it might take them hearing about your app a couple times.
Yeah, that's the bottom line is you got to do a lot of things. You got to make good software. You got to be a person be a person who is respectable or make your company appear to be a company that is respectable. Get people talking about you. And that's just the first step. That's, you know, and then build from there. So it sounds pretty easy, doesn't it, Manton?
Step one, step two. Where's profit?
Is that step two? Four? Question, yeah.
Yeah. No, question mark. That's Swift syntax.
Oh, right. That's what I've been missing. Swift will bring in all the money.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show this week. As always, you know, you can send us feedback at feedback@corrent.org. Check out the jobs board, jobs.corrent.org. We've always got new postings there for Mac and iOS positions.
And be sure to keep, working at your art, your craft, because no matter how good you think your software is today, trust me, it's not as good as it can be. It's worth iterating on it. That's what I'm always trying to do. I don't think my software is great. I'm going to be working on it, making it better, putting another release out, listening to great podcasts, opening my mind to new ideas, new ways of programming, using Swift, using Twitter, you know, all the requisite things. And until next week, Manton, take care of yourself and keep working on your great software and keep inching yourself one inch at a time closer towards this elusive success that we're looking for.
Sounds good. Talk to you next week.